Tonight I want to talk about the version of the Heart Sutra that we just read, that we call the Compassionate Heart of Wisdom. It's a rendering by my teacher, James Ford Roshi, here identified by his pen name, James Ishmael Ford. And we know him as James Myo-un Ford Roshi. I want to talk, before I talk about the text itself, about James and my relationship with him. Partly to set a context for my relationship to this text, which is new in our fourth edition liturgy book, and also to explore a little bit what it means to have a teacher, to be part of a lineage tradition, to be part of, we believe, made up ancestry that we say goes all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha 2600 years ago. And whether or not this is historically true, it's true in my heart that through James I connect with his teacher, who connects with his teacher, and on and on and on and on. Heart-to-heart transmission, we call it. Last night, Josh Roshi gave the second step of Dharma transmission, Denbo, to Steve Wallace, who now is Steve Sensei. We'll have to get used to that. It's an amazing thing that this keeps happening in Boundless Way Zen. I have a couple of Dharma heirs myself and a couple of about to be full Dharma heirs at some point, and probably, hopefully, this giving of the Dharma to an individual will continue for all of the teachers of Boundless Way. As Josh said this morning, when someone receives Denbo transmission, that means that they can then transmit the Dharma. And so because Boundless Way Zen is so rich in teachers, it means that there will be many, many branches going forward into the future from not just the teachers sitting up here in front of you, but teachers as yet unnamed, on and on and on. And even if the planet doesn't survive, I believe that somehow the Dharma will survive in some shape or form. Maybe aliens from another planet will land here and find something like a bell or a stick and say, huh, what's this? Well, we better keep this going, whatever it is. It seems pretty strong and powerful to me. And then they'll go off in their little spaceship to some place that maybe it's a planet that takes better care of itself. So that's a nice story. Anyway, I met James at a moment in my life when everything had fallen apart for me. I had been a student of the way, a Zen student, for many, many years before I met James, sincere and committed to the Dharma, committed to my Zen teacher, who I met when I was in my late 20s and who I just absolutely and unfortunately literally fell in love with. A man with a deep sense of the Dharma, a wonderful way with words, a great spiritual and energetic power, and also, sadly, because everyone I've ever met has some flaw that either we can use and nurture into something that helps all beings, or it can turn around and destroy us. It didn't quite destroy him, but it did seem to destroy me. He was a sexual predator, and he had affairs with many people in our Sangha, women. And he did his best to have an affair with me. It never came to fruition, but we were definitely not in a position with each other where we were equals. I was not able at the time to withstand the force of his charisma. And in finally untangling myself from that, I was lost. I loved the Dharma. I loved everything about Zen, especially. I was just in love with Zen more than I was in love with my teacher, for sure. Almost rivaling the love I feel for my husband and my daughter. Just a little smidge less. But that's a lot. Huge love. And so there I was. It really felt like I was wandering in the desert when I came to him and I said, I can no longer be your student. I am renouncing my vows. This thing that you do, I just can't go along with it. And it took me years and years and years to come to terms with that. But within the first few months of my wandering alone in the desert, I met this character from California named James Ford. And he saw something in me that he wanted to nurture. And I just want to read a couple of lines from an article that I wrote. Weirdly, I wrote this article probably about 6 or 8 months ago, and it wasn't published until just a month or so ago. Somehow I was riding the zeitgeist. I didn't even know about Harvey Weinstein or the Me Too movement or anything like that, but a lot of people have been surprised that this came way before all of that stuff. Just emerged into the culture in a way that I think it can't go back. I hope it doesn't go back to the living in delusion about what sexual predation is and how it affects everything from Dharma learning to personal relationships to work and to the election of our president. Now that our eyes are opened, it may be possible to close them again, but boy, my eyes just keep opening again and again and again. So I wrote this article, which the editors of the magazine it was published in called A Woman of Zen. And in it, I paid a little homage to James. And this is what I said in the article. I was talking about the struggle that I have to be a powerful woman of the way, partly because of gender discrimination and internalized sexism that I've lived with all my life. And I say here, this struggle began to resolve when I met my second Zen teacher, James Ford. Well, let's see if we can get through this little paragraph. He combined Dharma clarity with tenderness and kindness, and also demonstrated a scrupulous respect for boundaries, managing to keep his desires from inappropriately overshadowing his teaching. And even though by the time I met him, I had made a habit of hiding my own strength, he quickly recognized similar leadership qualities in me. His no-nonsense unwillingness to buy into my lack of self-confidence helped me develop my capacity to become a teacher, eventually enabling me to receive transmission from him. Even then, it's taken years for me to integrate my gender, my personality, and my Dharma understanding. So this capacity of James to have boundaries around some of the things that were deeply wounding to me in my Zen path was essential. And when he and I got together, and then David, who had a different teacher, came along and started teaching with us, and then Josh, who was also the Dharma heir of James, came along. Actually, we were all there from the beginning, but James works in mysterious ways, and he finally brought all four of us together to create this thing called Boundless Way Zen. And one of the things that we looked into in trying to figure out a name for this strange amalgamation of the Soto path, Rinzai-influenced Soto, and Korean Rinzai that came from the four of us, somebody, and I don't know who it was, maybe it was Josh, but somebody in the Sangha looked up, did a kind of word search of the words most commonly used by James, and found that boundless was a word he used a lot. And so we said, why not? Let's call it Boundless Ways End. And then 10 years ago when we bought and converted this building into a temple, Josh came up with the idea of calling it Boundless Way Temple. We got a little bit of negative feedback from some of our other Zen friends, people, other teachers, who said, I don't know if you really want to call what you're doing boundless, because don't you want to have some boundaries? And of course, the irony of these two words is that boundaries have been important to all four of us from the get-go. James created an ethical statement that's been adopted not just by Boundless Way Zen, but by many Zen sanghas throughout the United States. Ethics foremost, the precepts carrying us, not just opening to boundlessness, but also recognizing that boundaries and boundlessness have a very special connection. And how wonderful that James took it upon himself to reinterpret or rewrite one of the seminal texts of our way, of the Zen way, part of the Mahayana, the great vehicle. Every Mahayana group that I know of in the world values this Heart Sutra. The heart, not pointing to the beating heart, like the corazón, not the little heart in our chest, or the big heart in our chest, but the essence nature, the heart of things, that meaning, the way things actually are. The Heart Sutra points to that in a way that can be very, very challenging. Because it takes all the teachings of Buddhism and it says no to everything. There's a section where it talks about the Four Noble Truths, where it talks about our five remembrances, where it talks about all of the things that create a human being, which we call skandhas or heaps of different parts of our being. And it says no, no, no. And any of you who've worked with koans might recognize this no in another context. When that sincere, excited, you pick the adjective, monk comes to the great teacher Zhaozhou and says, really? Does everything have the Buddha nature? Even a dog? And maybe he means even me? Me with all my flaws, and I can point to all the ways that I screw up continuously. That even though I've been sitting for 40 years, I can still screw up in new ways the endless creativity of human beings. I am, as we say more recently following our ancestor Dogen, I am Buddha nature. I am the awakened nature. How is that possible? And Zhaozhou doesn't do the modern 21st century version of taking care of people. He doesn't say, oh no, you misunderstand. Let me help you. Let me take care of you. No, of course you have the Buddha nature. Let me tell you about it. He just says, no. Bless you. He just says, no, not this, not this. It's not even a word that means no. It's a word that means not or non. He's saying no to all of our ideas, all of our constructions, all of our ways of pulling the world together to make sense for us. He's saying, don't go there anymore. And that's what the Heart Sutra is also saying. Don't go there anymore. And it's full of a kind of radical love. Because when we go there, that is when we make stuff up, about ourselves, about other people, about the world, and cling to those made-up ideas. In my opinion, that's what causes most of the harm in the world. as Josh said earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday, it was last night, we talk about the three poisons of greed, anger, and ignorance. Ignorance sometimes translated as delusive certainty. And Josh said, there actually is no other kind of certainty. It's all delusive. All of it is delusive. Knowing anything, thinking we know. Not possible. Not possible. The world keeps opening itself up, unfolding in very surprising ways. My first teacher, with all his terrible flaws, I learned so much from him. And one of the things that he would say again and again was, may you be surprised. A great teaching. May you be surprised. The world unfolds. And James, in this text, uses language that is familiar to anyone who knows James. He says in a couple of places, dear ones, something I've adopted in my emailing. It just seems like that's part of the transmission, so what the heck. And he means it. Everyone is dear to the awakened heart. There is no one who's left out of that great love. Boundlessness is the word he chooses for a word that in the original sutra was shunyata, a word in Sanskrit that was translated by our 19th century male scholar friends as emptiness, leading to lots of confusion over the centuries, really, that somehow shunyata means nothing. But as the Vietnamese Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh points out, you can't say emptiness all by itself. You always have to say emptiness of something. So emptiness of anything that's fixed. Emptiness is anything that we can hold on to and cling to, including a self. Emptiness of structured, conventional clinging to our delusive certainty. And so this little sutra just keeps going on and on. It's not this, it's not that, it's not this, it's not that. Until the end, when we have the great gatha, the little verse that is affixed to the end of the sutra. Gatte, gatte, paragatte, parasamgatte, bodhi svaha. Which we usually translate as gone, gone, gone beyond, completely gone beyond, enlightenment, hail. That's svaha. I have a friend who's trained in the Hindu tradition, and she explained to me that svaha is a word that people use in modern-day India to say, that's the way it is, isn't that great? It's sort of like yippee. Or sometimes it's used in a way that means, well, that's the way it is, what are you going to do? So between us, this friend and I, like to say svaha to each other when we're dealing with the craziness of the world. James translates shunyata as boundlessness instead of emptiness. Very important. I like to say thusness, but I think boundlessness is a better word for it. It's more of a regular English word. Something that is so unbounded, something that fills the universe, that is vast, that has no limits. It's something that's impossible to imagine. And I imagine this awakened heart that fills the universe, this shunyata, this boundlessness, as love. That no matter how hard we try to protect ourselves from it, it just can't help itself from manifesting. And as I said the other day, not the kind of Valentine's Day love or the insincere love that people try to express with a big smile on their faces. Yes, 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 I love you, yes. But a different kind of love. I absolutely love everything. You can feel the connection to Steve's talk this morning. Every day is a good day. How could this be? Well, in the world of boundlessness, it's, as we say, a no-brainer. So James translates the Gatha at the end in a very, very typical James Ford way. The beginning is the conventional gone, gone, gone beyond, completely gone beyond. And of course, where are we going? Nowhere, because the path is boundless. And then he ends by saying, blessings and blessings. When we touch into the great heart of perfect wisdom, the compassionate heart of wisdom, the heart of the bodhisattva of compassion, who he calls simply the heart of compassion, when we touch into that and let ourselves be carried by it, then we don't have to do everything anymore. And we can let ourselves sink into this love that has no opposite. A no that isn't the opposite of yes. A full opening to the way things actually are. For me, the Zen path is nothing other than this. A bowing to how it is. And I want to end tonight. I didn't know how I was going to work this in, but boy, life is mysterious. Kate Sheridan, who is the editor of the Boundless Way Temple newsletter, which goes out 4 times a year, is preparing it to go out during the coming and going session, and she asked people in the Sangha for contributions to talk to them about what it means to be at the coming and going session. Coming and going, Hakuin says, we are never astray. And one of our Sangha members, our Dharma teacher and priest, and tonight's practice leader, Aaron Caruso, contributed this poem. So I'd like to end with this little bit of an example of opening to everything, bowing to everything, making the path everything that we encounter. This is what Aaron says. -23 degrees centigrade at sunrise. A fine occasion to enter this coming and going. Find your place. Bring a warm heart. Stay for hot oatmeal. Right here, where your grass has always been green, attain the way and get to work. There are no vacations in paradise. Simply make use of your time. Break your back. Wreck your health. Bite your tongue. And bow. Thank you. Please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue. I think everyone knows what to do.
Drinking this turmeric and ginger tea here, which I highly recommend. And on my tea bag, I think I've had 3 cups, and on each of the cups on the little label, it says, I wish I had a British accent. I already have a little British accent.
Thank you, Diane.
I guess I wanted to share that I met James when he was still at the Providence Sangha, and everything was falling apart for me with a mentor figure, charismatic monastic, actually, with whom I started an organization and had to let that go. James once sent to me something that I took as kind of my favorite teacher, like, shade throwing, which was, I'd given a bad answer, and he said, "Oh, that's only good in the sense that everything is good."
Oh, man, that's great. Wow. I love that.
Hashtag 100. Really? But listening to both of your talks today, I can see that as also a compliment.
Yeah.
Everything's good.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah.
Thank you. Great. That was very good. Thank you for bringing that in. That's so important. And that was, of course, an attempt by Chinese Chan people to translate shunyata, but it has so many more elements than emptiness. Emptiness kind of shuts down a little bit. Yeah. And what is it again? Say it in Chinese. Kong?
K-O-N-G.
Oh, Kong. Okay.
Yeah.
I miss James, you know.
Yep. You know, I gotta say, I miss him, and I feel the connection between us is unbreakable, and that so I get he's with me every day, and I think he's with Boundless Way Zen every day. You know, he would have no clue about that. It's more, and I think that's very important to know that that we carry our loved ones with us, but it's not their business to, you know, carry me. But he made this place possible in his wonderful, boundless way, right? That isn't always perfectly skillful, but so has so much goodwill in it, and we benefit from him.
Yeah,
from that. Yeah.
I remember I had the fortune of being part of those meetings where he was discussing the ethics, you know, bringing that forth to the leadership, and you know, I didn't really understand, like, why do we need all this? So, I mean, but just kind of trusting that wisdom and really starting to see, oh wow, really, what a gift that has been, not only for our Sangha, but apparently lots of Sanghas, to kind of really, you know, carry this boundlessness in a way that is helpful.
There's a mudra that exists of one finger held in the fist of the other hand. This is a mudra of inner secrecy. One of the things about James, you know, and one way that he manifests both the goodness of his heart and this boundlessness is his open-handedness in all things and the generosity in which he is willing to give it all away. This Dharma that is so precious to each of us, as Melissa so beautifully portrayed for her, James is willing to give it all away. And there's one of the 10 grave precepts is in an important way aimed specifically at those of us who find ourselves in a Dharma teaching position to not spare Dharma assets. There's a temptation and a sad tendency that we may want to hold back some secret, some piece that we don't give away, that we don't give to our heirs, so that we always have more, and we can thereby keep our position of specialness. And the job of a teacher, a Dharma teacher, as modeled with such staggering beauty and consistency from James, is to make ourselves completely not special, and in a really important way, completely not needed. And what boundless gifts we all continue to receive from the open-handedness and open-heartedness that James leads with, embodies, and teaches. It's actually not a thing that comes naturally to me. And I had to learn it with careful study. So, my boundless gratitude, too.
Interesting that you showed us that mudra, because when I you know, my first teacher was really a koan for me, because he was so brilliant and so amazing, and yet the real flaw wasn't even being a sexual predator. It was that he kept secrets, and did not offer the Dharma freely to everyone, just to a few special people. And I think that's one of the things that I'm very grateful for here, that really, and I've never, personally, just my personality alone, I was just saying to somebody recently that I'm an open book, sometimes to a fault, and boy, he was a closed book. And I wouldn't say that James was either a closed or an open book, but he's a book that will open when it needs to and close when it needs to. You know, it's a really
graphic
nice
novel.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Just wanted to thank you for sharing yourself. You know, you're part of your story and what happened to you and how you found your way. As we all have to do in our lives, right? But I so appreciate hearing how others find their way. So thank you for that. And I also really appreciated the part that one of the parts you focused on in the chant, where it's not that, not that, not that, and I appreciated you pointing out the word actually is a no, it's a not or non, right? And it just, I just had this beautiful image of like, so everything you think of, well, everything that you think of or make up or, you know, whatever, it's like, not that, not that, not that, not that, not that, like, forever. It's not that, right? So great. And then the last thing I just want to say is that you, so there's two ideas I'm trying to bring together here. So here's the thing that James, I remember this was early days, and I don't exactly know when or what the situation was, but I remember him saying how important it was to him that there were women in positions of leadership in this organization, Boundless Ways In. And there were, and when, so when I arrived, which was a while ago now, there were women Enos, there was a woman teacher sitting at the front, who was also ordained as a priest. There were women in leadership roles throughout the organization, and at that time I had no idea what roles I might step into, but I saw that there was an opportunity for women, for me, and also for men. That was clear that both were included, and also that both were needed, that all were needed, right? And so seeing you, because you were, I saw you be ordained, I saw you, you know, you were sitting up at the front as a teacher, as you are now. And we have Diane and Kate as well, and all of these wonderful men teachers too. And so what a gift, as such an example for everyone to know that all are important.
Thank you.
I'm really struck by this boundary and boundlessness. I think I've really craved that kind of safety of the boundary, something to hold. But I've always, I had a history teacher who taught everything in this relationship of security or freedom. All policies were done based on creating this need for security or freedom, and then all the way macro, micro, and I took that with me everywhere. And I always wanted to rush into the freedom. I just wanted it. I always want the boundlessness, but I want it in this way that is not it. And then I feel kind of all over the place. So the boundary is something I feel at times when I first came here last year, defiant against. Like, for what? No. What? Let me just have my boundlessness. And then I really started to grow to feel like that container of it, the boundary of this physical space. And then I just had an experience today where that boundary, how it gave me that boundlessness, how it opened to that boundlessness was like something I've really never experienced. And I had my eyes closed during meditation, and I opened them, and I felt something different, and I saw these legs. Cute legs that I knew so well that I probably had spoken just at the end of last year a few words to, and a hug like I'll never forget. And I just, you know, this person walked in, Susan walked in, and it was like, I was just in tears. And I was just like, it was like this boundlessness. Like, I didn't know he could just have so much that he could walk through this, these legs. And I just was like, I really thought I was going to explode, you know? And then even there, I had like the boundary and the boundlessness because I just wanted to hug her, but then there was these boundaries. And I did hug her without even having to hug her at first, and it was like the most amazing hug. It was just while I was seated here, and I felt every part of it, and it was like just so beautiful. And then I did actually really hug her too, and that was beautiful too, but it was, for me, that real experience of those things together, and without the boundary of all of this and the silence and the connection that leads us, or that we get there from that boundary, that, that boundlessness was just truly amazing. So thank you for your time.
You know, I love hearing what you're saying, Laura, I hadn't actually thought about the connection between boundary and boundlessness until I opened my mouth tonight. I just actually trusted that I had a form for the talk, you know, and the talk has its own boundary, right? But who knew how the container would get filled? And there's something about Zen practice that has this incredible balance there, right? That what we realize, what we awaken to, is truly boundless. It's truly, you know, limitless, right? And yet we can't see it unless we put a frame around it. You know, you might have met Susan somewhere, and yeah, Susan's great, blah, blah, blah. But those legs, right? Just the limited quality of perception, because we keep our eyes down, we don't make eye contact. That's like so we actually can appreciate the world. There's a garden in Italy that David and our daughter and I went to once, and it's called the Garden of the Spider's Web or something like that. It's up in Tuscany, and somebody made it because he thought that, I think he was an American, he thought the Tuscan landscape was so gorgeous, but nobody noticed it. So the garden, you walk through and there are all these like limited views, plants that grow around. Do you know the garden I'm talking about? No. It's just, to me, that's some kind of essence quality about what we're doing here, that we think, you know, why can't I talk? Why can't I move? Why do I have to bow here and, you know, turn to the left? And what is all this? And then we settle into that, you know, as Aaron said in his poem. And then something like this, something extraordinary happens within those, the frame. We see the mountain and we couldn't see it if it was just unframed. So, and maybe that's a good time. Place to start.